Accession number 14204, Reel 1.
Reel 1. And if I could ask you first of all, Mr. Wright, something about your background in the United States, you know, before World War I. Could you tell me something about your family and the sort of life you had?
Definitely. As stated before, my name is Marvin Wright. I was born in Fulton, Alabama in 1917. My family, which consisted of my father and mother and one sister, moved from Alabama to Washington, Pennsylvania in the early 20s. My father was employed in a coal mine outside of Washington, Pennsylvania, and there he was hurt in the mine, and he died as a result of his injuries. That was in 1927, November 1927. As a result of that, my mother packed up myself and my sister, and we moved to East St. Louis, Illinois, where we had a host of relatives. I went to public school, elementary school, in East St. Louis, Illinois. I finished high school, Lincoln High School to be exact, in East St. Louis, Illinois, in 1935. In September 1935, I went to Lincoln University at Jefferson City, Missouri, for 1 year. That was in the heart of the Depression, and I couldn't afford to go back to Lincoln University. However, I was a pretty good musician. I was a drummer, in fact. And I came back to East St. Louis, and I joined a traveling band, an orchestra, that is. And we traveled throughout the country for approximately 3 years. I had saved up enough money to return to college. This time I went down to Xavier University in New Orleans, Louisiana. That was approximately 1940, about 1940, yes. There, the war clouds came over December the 7th. I was at Xavier University, December the 7th. Shortly thereafter, I was drafted. I was drafted in February 1942. I forget the exact date, February 1942.
Could I stop you there?
Yes,
because
ma'am.
That seems a very good stage. And if I could ask you something about the issue of discrimination against black Americans during the time you were growing up.
Oh, yes.
Going into this period, could you tell me something about that?
Well, I didn't encounter too much discrimination, or maybe I didn't realize I was being discriminated against in Washington, Pennsylvania. But after we moved to East St. Louis, let me back up. In Pennsylvania, I was in an integrated school. But after we moved to East St. Louis, we were put in an all-black school, Dunbar Elementary School. And consequently, we didn't come in contact with any other race of people. I went to a black high school, Lincoln High School, all black, and consequently I didn't come into contact with whites or any other race of people. And of course, in my traveling throughout the United States with the orchestra, I encountered all sorts of discrimination, in the South especially, some of which I'd rather not even talk about, all sorts of discrimination. Is that what you mean now? I encounter discrimination in the South, whereas we would have to eat in separate facilities, live in separate facilities. Sometimes there weren't any facilities at all. We had to sleep on the bus. We had a traveling bus. And that was it up until the time I got drafted.
Did you, were you aware of the events, you know, building up in Europe? Would this have meant anything to Americans at that time? You know, the fact that a war had started in Europe?
Yes, I was vaguely familiar with the goings-on. In 1939, when I think Hitler invaded Poland, 1939. But I wasn't too concerned about it because, as the average person would say, that's over in Europe, so why concern myself about it? We've got our own problems here. So I was aware of the war in Europe, and December the 7th, as I said before, I was in down at Xavier University in Louisiana, and I figured my number would soon be up by being drafted. And I received my draft notice in New Orleans, and I pleaded with the draft officials in Louisiana to please let me come back to East St. Louis, Illinois, to be drafted from home so I could see my family and to get out of the South. And they granted my wish, and I was drafted from East St. Louis. From there, I was drafted at Fort Custer, Michigan, thank goodness. And my basic training was out here in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. And I'd done a pretty good job out there. They kept me out there for 18 months after basic training. And finally, they shipped me to Fort Francis E. Warren, Wyoming. And from there, I went overseas.
Would you have been in a segregated unit?
We were in a segregated outfit, as we call it, unit or outfit. We consisted of our company was the 3109th Quartermaster Service Company. Quartermaster, that one word, we deal with supplies for the regular army. Our unit consisted of approximately 250 men, of which the officers were all white. We had a captain as the commander, and we had two lieutenants who were second lieutenants who were both white. But the other individuals in the company were all white.
Did you mind that?
I didn't have any problem with it. Ironically, most of the individuals in my company were from the South, and I didn't encounter too much concern because I was in the Army and I followed directions. It didn't concern me too much.
Does this mean that you were treated with respect by those officers?
I certainly was, because I'm not bragging or anything. My level of education was higher than the average soldier in my company. They were all from the South, and the majority of them hadn't finished high school. So I didn't encounter any problems. In fact, I was almost like an officer myself.
So could I ask you now about your drafting overseas? You know, how that came. What did you have any more service in America before you went abroad?
Yes. As I said before, I was out to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, for approximately 18 months. From there, I was sent to Wyoming, and we were out there until approximately the 1st of May, 1944.
Yes, what were you doing? What was your job then?
My job in my unit was supply sergeant. I furnished the clothing, the tools that my men used. I furnished supplies for my unit. Now, the entire unit furnished supplies such as ammunition and fuel, petrol as you call it, for the army. They were all working people. But I stayed at the company headquarters, and they were out handling ammunition, handling oil, fuel, petrol, whatever. And my job was to supply the company with supplies, supply sergeant. My rank was staff sergeant.
You would have had a very good idea, I think, Mr. Wright, about the state of the American economy in getting these supplies through. No, was it? Were they plentiful? Were the supplies coming through very strongly?
Oh yes, I never encountered any shortage of supplies because we were on a war footing then. But back to this discrimination thing, I used to read in the papers about. I never was in the South for during my tenure in the Army. But I used to read about the soldiers rioting and being placed in confinement in the South for breaking the segregation rules. But I never encountered any of that because I never soldiered in the South.
How were your family doing while you were away in the war? You know, did they have any problems, or was life changing because of the war for them on the civilian front?
First of all, my family. My mother was employed in the school system as a custodian while I was in service. And my sister was in college, ironically. She's 2 years younger than me, and she was in college, and she was also a teacher after she finished college. But we used to just, in service, we used to read about the shortages, fuel, and what do they call them, stamps, some kind of stamps they had. You probably wouldn't know, eh? I've forgotten what kind of stamps they had in order to buy sugar and things like that.
Oh, so the rationing system.
Yes, the rationing, but I was in service and I just wasn't concerned with that. Sometimes I'd read in the paper about automobile tires were hard to come by, or what else, gasoline. But we had our own problems in the service when the war would be over. And consequently, we were shipped overseas. As I related before, we left Camp Kilmer, New York, on the Queen Elizabeth. Yes, ma'am. And I understand there were approximately 10,000 soldiers on that ship. We did not go in a convoy. The Queen Elizabeth traveled alone. It took the northern route out of the way of the submarines. But we travel alone. And, of course, I was below decks. I never got to come on top of the deck because 10,000 soldiers, a lot of manpower on a ship. And as I told you before, we took the northern route. We landed in Greenock, I think is the name of the place, in Scotland.
How long was that journey?
Approximately 3 or 4 days at the most. 3 days. Most of the convoys took a week or more to get to England. But yeah, that's it. And we landed in Greenock. From there on, we, if I can remember, we got on a smaller boat and went ashore. From Glasgow, we took the train down to southern England.
What was your impression of England when you arrived?
My first impression was, this might sound foolish, but why doesn't it get dark at 10 or 11 o'clock in the day? But I never realized England was much farther north than what I was used to. 11 o'clock in the evening, it was still daylight. But other than that, I'd read a lot about England. The beer, they drink the warm beer. And we didn't come in contact. I think we got one pass to town, as we'd call it. But I don't remember much about that, except the warm beer. And we were a holding area. We were in Southampton or whatever. And
so really, am I right in thinking you would have gone to England immediately for the invasion of France, as it were? That your role was, you know, as a sort of base to set off for France?
I don't quite understand you.
You arrived in England just really very near D-Day, didn't you?
Oh, yes, we did. Yes, ma'am. Oh. And ironically, here's another strange situation. I was in Southampton. My company went across the channel separately from my supply officer and myself. The whole entire company went on another boat, and my supply officer and myself were on another another boat. Excuse me. It was terrible weather conditions. Mm-hmm. We got seasick. I guess we were on the channel 2 days. I had lost all track of time. The weather was so bad. You know, I get choked up when I think about it now. And everybody was sick, and that's it. We got to Omaha Beach, and another weird experience. We had to climb down some rope ladders off of the ship and get on an LST, landing ship tank, they call it, sort of a barge-like affair. And we went ashore. Of course, the beach was pretty much secured then. In fact, we could hear the shooting off in the distance. I didn't shoot anybody or anything. But my main concern was to find my company. And, of course, my officer. We found them the next day. But it looked like to me just mass confusion on that beach.
This would have been the day after the
yes, ma'am. The 7th. It was the day after, because the regular combat troops, you must remember, there were few, very, very few black combat troops. Most of us were service-oriented. Truck drivers and such as my company, handling supplies or construction, things like that.
Why was that, do you think? Why weren't there more black combat troops?
Well, there had been a history of segregation in the armed forces. Now, they had combat troops. Well, I understand there were a few in the Revolutionary War. There were a few in the Civil War. After the Civil War, there were combat troops harassing the Indians in the western part of the United States. But we just took it for granted. We just took it for granted. There were, however, two black combat divisions, I understand. I think one went to Italy, and the other went to the South Pacific. The 92nd and 93rd divisions were all black, I understand. But we were attached to the 1st Army at Omaha Beach under General Bradley. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Now, if you're patient with me,
of course.
And I hope you're going to be, could I take you back to England, to your time in England? I know it was a short time.
Yes, it was a short time, less than a month.
Yes, the base you were in, this was near Southampton. What's
I can't remember even the name of the base, ma'am.
No, can you remember the sort of nature of the outfit? Was it a very bustling atmosphere?
It was a bustling and apprehensive. Apprehensive is the word. We all knew we were going across the channel, but the main thing was when. And I heard my name and my over the loudspeaker, and that was it. But is coming in contact with the civilians in England very little, because we were on a mission, I guess.
Were you given any instructions about how to treat the English people if you met them out?
No, ma'am, but I heard a lot of rumors. I heard a lot of rumors that the white troops from the United States had made disparaging remarks about the black troops, such as we had tails and especially the ladies, we had tails and we were rape conscious and all a whole lot of foolishness that went in one ear and out the other. I didn't encounter any segregation in England, but except for what the army was doing to us, we were segregated.
And also, the preparation for D-Day, you know, you were there this sort of month beforehand. Was that really something? What was going on preparing for the invasion? Did you see any signs of it?
Oh, yes, we just saw miles and miles of supplies. You mean while in England? We saw miles and miles of supplies, stacks upon stacks of supplies. And it was... just a harrowing experience that crossing the channel. I thought I was going to die on that trip. And then I thought I was going to die being transferred from the ship we came across the channel on to the smaller ship. Because, as I said before, it was terrible weather. The ship was going up and down. Here there was the barge going up. And you had to time yourself. If you didn't time yourself getting off that rope ladder, you would be crushed right then and there. And what a horrible thought, to get crushed without even getting ashore. Oh, but I came through it.
The actual day of the invasion, do you remember anything about that, the day before you went? June the 6th.
The day before I went?
Yes, which would have been the
day. I was on a ship.
You were on a ship. Yeah. Do you remember the events of that day? You know, the fact that... When did you hear the people had landed, for instance? Do you remember that?
Well, I honestly believe we were scheduled... I was scheduled to land D-Day itself. But the weather was so bad, and they... found resistance more than they thought on the beach, and consequently we were there the next day. We landed the next day.
What was the sea like? You know, were there many boats?
As far as the eye could see. If the weather was bad, you couldn't see too far, but they had barrage balloons. They had a lot of those in the air. And Well, it's almost impossible for me to relate it because it's been so long ago, but just except generally, it was something you would never expect to see. But as I said before, my main recollection of the Channel crossing was the weather. It was terrible.
And Omaha Beach, as you approached it, what did that look like?
Omaha Beach, it was still raining. And it just looked like mass confusion. You had the military police trying to direct traffic. Traffic was enormous. Looked like there was just mass and general confusion. And we finally found our company the next day. And we stayed right on the beach that night and the next night. And then we moved farther inland. I don't know exactly where we were. It was a little town, St. Mary Eglise. I do remember the name of that little town. But after we got situated, I brought a map along. After we got situated, after St. Mary Eglise, Omaha Beach was secured, I would go to Cherbourg for supplies and things like that. I don't know if I can find... Where is it? All these places I have been. I don't see St. Mary Eglise on here, but Arrow Manches, I've been there. Bill, I'm probably not pronouncing these right, but that's what we call them. Bill Carrington, and this is where I used to go with the truck driver to get supplies.
Well, that's sure.
Cherbourg. After it was open up, that was one of the first ports that we open up, the Army open up, and the Navy. And that was my experience in Normandy. Yes.
Yes. How quickly did the supplies come through? Because this was your job, as it were.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
We were at Omaha Beach approximately 2 weeks. Yeah, it's kind of vague now, about 2 weeks before we could get supplies through Cherbourg. Yeah. Now, that was before St. Lo. I guess you've heard of St. Lo. That was before the breakthrough. And then after the breakthrough, we were at another place, Billadeau. That's where we were stationed until the breakthrough at St. Lo. After the breakthrough at St. Lo, we went on across France, too close to the German border. Verdun. Probably heard of Verdun in World War I. Yeah, I was amazed at that place. Fortress, old-time fortresses. Now, we're jumping time here. This was approximately November 44 and December, just before the breakthrough, the German breakthrough, such as Bastogne and all that.
So I imagine that you would have been fairly near the front, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, ma'am. We could hear the large guns and everything, definitely. And we, as I said before, we had traveled across France with the Third Army then, of which Patton was the commanding general, George Patton. And we were situated in Verdun, thinking we were just about to go into Germany. And then came the Battle of the Bulge, which was in December 44.